Brian Head Welch, ex-guitarist of Korn, drops in for a chat, being a Big Mac user. Bill Palmer of iProg Magazine, regulars Guy Searle, David Coam, and me, Tim Robertson. My Mac Podcast number 199.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And we're back for another exciting edition of the MyMac.com podcast. I don't know why I'm talking like that. Every now and then, you know. This week's show, we've got Guy Searle. Hello, Guy Searle.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, how are you doing today, Guy?
Hey, I'm doing real good.
Hey, let's check the traffic on the I-94 this week. Okay, anyways.
Come on down.
Do they have radio shows like that in the UK, David Cohen?
They do, don't you? Unfortunately.
Who are these people that can talk like that so early in the morning?
They're clones.
Hey, we're the Morning Zoo crew. I'm Buffy and joined by, it's always, I'm the doctor.
I think they're fueled by the chemicals from the night before.
Yeah, maybe. But most of these guys are like in their late 40s, early 50s. They just have a really good radio voice, but some reason they have to use these kind of weird, I don't know. Anyways, this is podcasting, so we don't do that. Well, at least not on this show.
Not on purpose. No, let me say that. Let me say that we do it on purpose.
This week we invited Bill Palmer, who's been on and off the show for a couple years now, at least, and I kind of noticed it's been a while since we had Bill Palmer on the show, so I said, hey, Bill, want to come on the show? And it was earlier today, and he said, or no, that was yesterday, I asked you, wasn't it, Bill?
I think so, yeah. Well, I got lost in the Hollywood Hills. I've been wandering for months. Thank God somebody found me so I can get back on the show.
Hey, look, there's Bill. grab him.
Step into the light, Bill. Step into the light.
So let's add
some moron swinging from the Hollywood sign. Oh, it's just Bill.
So let's start with you, Bill. How is iProg Magazine doing?
Well, I tell you, we're coming up on our 25th issue pretty soon, which just kind of blows my mind because we just started this joint back in December when we made the transition. You know, we've been doing a lot of music and podcasting coverage, so it's, I don't know. My mind is blown on the whole thing. That's why I go get lost in the Hollywood Hills all the time just to hide from people.
You've got the opportunity to meet a lot of famous musicians at this point.
Yeah, I've been really pleasantly surprised how many rock stars that everybody's heard of have been willing to talk to somebody like me, a publication like iProg that's a magazine that doesn't have a print version. Some of them love the fact, the guy from Crosby, Stills, and Nash, he don't do interviews, but he specifically did us because he's an iPhone user. He wanted to talk about that. So, you know, it's nice having still being tied into the iPod, iPhone, iTunes stuff, as you guys well know.
Yeah, well, we're starting to do some of those, mostly thanks to you. Bill sent some of his contacts my way, and I'm telling these people, hey, if you got anybody that's a Mac user that has a new album coming out, we'd be happy to talk to them. And we've got someone just like that this week. In fact, Brian Head Welch, he used to play guitar for Korn up to just a couple years ago, and he quit. We don't really get into why he quit. I know it was substance abuse problems, and then he kind of found himself. He became very religious and kind of broke away from Korn and has his own new album coming out, which I have a copy of. So it's kind of cool talking to him. I did that. What's today? Today's Thursday, so it was yesterday, actually, that I did the interview with Brian Welch, and I'll play that a little bit later on the show. I think a lot of our listeners they'll probably enjoy it. But we talk about a lot of different stuff. We talk about the music industry, the RIAA, suing your listeners. And, you know, we go into quite a few things in there, so hopefully people will enjoy it. I thought it was kind of fun talking to him. But on a personal level, I'm really looking forward to doing an interview with Tesla. It's a band that I've been listening to Tesla since their very first album. And we're going to do an interview.
I know, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, one of the people in Tesla is a big Mac user, so we're going to talk about Macs and stuff. It's going to be pretty cool. Who, Bill, over at iProg Magazine that you interview that you thought, this is just really freaking cool, I'm digging this?
I gotta tell you, talking to David Crosby, I know I just mentioned that, but the guy he's pushing 70, and I think he knows more about the iPhone than I do. I mean, he didn't just buy one. He's talking about, you know, the way the inertia is on there, and talking about the, you know, what features he thinks next. And I can't remember any of that off the top of my head. But that's just really cool because everybody says, oh, it's for young people, it's for kids, or, you know, if you buy your parents one, you're going to have to teach them. But no, this dude is like 70 years old, you know, and he's out there at the front of this. He's got Wi-Fi on the Crosby, Stills & Nash tour. They go in and set that up ahead of time so he'll have Wi-Fi on the iPhone and on his laptop. So that just really kind of blew me away. Don't matter how old you are, you can get into this stuff.
That's awesome. So what's going on in the Mac world right now, Guy Searle? Anything happening that we should be aware of?
Well, there's a big event next Tuesday you may have heard about.
Yeah.
Apple just put out some flyers that says, "Let's rock!" And there I'm going back to the radio DJ voice. It looks to me like this is mostly going to be about iPods and iTunes. Some of the things that have been rumored so far is they're saying it could be an updated iPod Touch. There's been rumors about a redesigned iPod Nano, and also some other rumors about that iTunes may go to version 8.
I think that's about time.
Include a subscription service.
I don't know. What do you think, David Cohen? What do you think's gonna? I think we definitely got a new Nano coming, but what else do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a fair amount of evidence now that the iPod software floating around is fairly solid. So I'd be very surprised if we saw a Nano. If we didn't see a Nano update, and if the device we get is a device that's been rumored, which basically goes back to the original first-generation Nano form factor in that, unlike the current model, it's thinner but taller.
I like the first-generation. I thought that was the best-looking iPod they've ever made.
You know what? The funny thing is, about this time last year, and actually, what's worth commenting on is the September iPod events now seem to be pretty much a regular fixture every year. When the rumors of the third generation Nano came out, the pictures, it just looked terrible. But when it was actually launched and you saw one actually, you know, saw the actual device, I thought to myself, this is the best Nano they've ever done. And I still really love the device. But I must admit, this new one is intriguing because by going back to that older form factor, they appear to be going to a larger screen that you kind of turn on the side so you can get widescreen movies on, and obviously you get a much bigger picture than you can currently get with the 3G Nano. So it's going to be interesting to see how that falls out.
I wonder how they're going to turn it on.
The newly redesigned Nano that they had for the last time is it considered a failure? Was sales not good for it, or do you think that this is more along the lines of possibly retiring the classic look?
No,
and sticking with only flash memory inside of iPod.
You know what it is, Guy? I think that Apple learned a lot from the auto industry. When every year the auto industry has to sell new cars, they have to change something. And last year's model isn't as good as this year's model. And really the only changes is cosmetic for the most part. And I think Apple is kind of taking that outlook. Every 18 months to 2 years now, I think they're just going to simply refresh the iPod line, make it look a little bit different, and call it brand new. I think that's a very smart way to market their products.
I must admit, when I mentioned to my wife the other day, I said, oh, here's a new iPods next week. And she said, how can they possibly change any of them? They've refined them so much now. How can they be any different? So, every year now it's going to be more and more of a challenge to actually come up with something that, at least on the surface, looks like it's an improvement to make people go out and... Because let's face it, you've sold so many of the things now, they really need to get people to trade up. There can't be many people left who want an iPod who don't already have one. So, you know, they're actually selling to people who already own some of the older devices. So it is about trying to convince them to go out and drop whatever the money is down to actually change to the new model. So it's important to...
I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Well, as I was going to say, it's important to make sure that there's some sort of perceived added value from the new model. I think the question you're going to ask, Guy, is you know, based on this new Nano, would I go out and buy one? I've got to say, for me, with my current level of income, the price of an 8-gig Nano is pretty much something that you know, if I feel like doing, I can do. I'll do what I do every time they refresh the iPods. I'll go down to the Apple store, have a look, and if I like it, I might well put my old one up on eBay and buy the new one.
Well, if the one that's getting ready to come out, hopefully next Tuesday, does have a bigger screen, I would say that is an improvement over the current Nano.
Yeah,
so
I like the current one, and I find the screen for my eyes, because it's so sharp, I find it actually quite watchable. I've watched it for probably 3-4 hours straight sometimes without a problem at all. But I know some other people have said to me that they find the screen a bit too small to watch for a long period. So I find the whole thing really with the video quite ironic, bearing in mind that one of the things Steve Jobs said he would never do was do flash memory iPods and do video iPods because he didn't think there was any market for them, and now they're the biggest sellers.
Well, I think you're going to hear a lot of that when he doesn't have a product like that ready to sell. Of course, he's not going to really advertise that, but now that they have those products, he's going to market the heck out of it because, let's be honest, that's his job. Bill Palmer,
that's right.
iProng started because of the iPod. I mean, that was your market. And at one point, I know for a fact that you had every single frickin' iPod that you could buy. Is that still the case? Do you have all the iPods?
I have all of them. I have 20 different iPods, and I regularly use, I guess, none of them. It's a strange thing for me because of the iPhone. I am just barely technically still an iPod user by virtue of the fact that I've got a video iPod that sits in a speaker system and never leaves, and a second-gen Nano that I use for voice recording when I'm doing face-to-face interviews. The shuffles I don't touch. The classic I have no music on, and I use it for backing up stuff I don't care much about. Very strange environment, and yet talk of a new Nano actually kind of excites me.
No, I understand that.
It's kind of funny. I was one of those people who hated the 3G Nano when I saw a photo of it, liked it when I saw it in person, held it in my hand, thought this will work, bought one, ended up hating it. To me, it was, at least on a personal level, a massive disappointment compared to the second-gen Nano. There's so many things you can do with the second-gen. You can just stick a little plastic clip on it, clip it to your shirt collar, clip it to the pocket of your pants. So the things you can't do with the third-gen, both because it's got that scratchable backside, which is why I'd never want to use it in the first place, because you have to put it in a case to keep it nice or a film or some crap, which you didn't have to do with the second, and because it's just too wide to do much of anything with. If they come out with a fourth-gen Nano that's shaped like a second, I might buy a new fourth-gen Nano just because I know my second-gen Nano is going to die eventually and I need something to record on. And I hate recording on the third-gen Nano. I hate toting it around, and I really didn't think that was going to be the case the first time I had it in my hand. But they may actually get me to buy one more iPod just by going back to the second-generation model on the fourth generation.
Now, you mentioned your
iPod. If they do come out with new iPod Nanos, what do you think the memory sizes are going to be?
I think it's going to depend on the shape. It's tough to say. I mean, what are they at now? Is it tops out at 8?
4 and 8.
Okay, four and eight. It just depends on Apple's thinking. They finally got an iPod, you know, I mean, they've got the iPod at 16, I'm sorry, the iPhone. How much does Apple really want to try to steer people toward the iPhone? If they do a 16 gig Nano, is that going to sort of, I mean, Apple will sell you a Nano, they'll sell you a Touch, they'll sell you whatever you want, they'll take your money, but they want you to buy an iPhone. That's Steve's dream, buy an iPhone. Oh, we can't sell you an iPhone? Okay, well, here's these other iPods you can try. How much does Apple want to steer people toward the iPhone? Are they willing to have the same capacity in a Nano? And that's after you've answered the question of whether it can fit in the new model or not.
Here's a question for you. When we think of the iPod, we think of this little hardware device. When we think of the iPhone, at least I don't think most people think of an iPod, but it is an iPod. Here's my question. Is the iPod in the iPhone simply a software iPod? And does that hold true with the real iPod? What do you think, David Cohen?
That's a tough question to answer. Is it just a software iPod? I know it's such a good iPod that I actually use it most of the time.
That's the problem with the iPhone. If you're an iPod user, you don't use your iPod. It becomes. In fact, I wrote an article that was just that for iProng magazine, saying that I don't use my full-size iPod. So you're saying that's the same thing with you?
It is. I mean, the thing for me is obviously the iPhone goes with me wherever I go because I carry my phone. So it's very convenient for me to have, mostly I listen to podcasts and watch video on it. And it's very convenient for me to have it with me for that purpose. I do use my iPod Nano quite a lot, but I tend to use that at home. So what I do is when I come in the house, I put the phone down and put it onto charge. And then I sync my status from the phone to the Nano, and then I put the Nano in my portable speakers. And then that's what goes with me around the house when I'm doing chores and that sort of thing. So I don't often use. I very, very rarely take the Nano out of the house, which is kind of bizarre when you stop and think about it for a moment. But I I wouldn't like to just go purely to the iPhone and have to use that in the house and out the house, because it would be flat all the time, because I would never get a chance to charge it.
Is that the go ahead.
Yeah, that's the reason why I have the two.
Is that the same with you, Bill Palmer? You just don't use your iPods because you have your iPhone with you and it is your iPod?
Yeah, apparently there are some people, maybe even a lot of people, who don't carry their cell phone all the time. I carry mine all the time. Sometimes I leave it in a dock because I live in a very small apartment here. So, but I feel like my iPhone is always within distance of me hearing it. And people say, well, why don't you carry a Shuffle or Nano? That's smaller. I say, well, okay, but I always have the phone. So if you're telling me to carry a phone plus a Shuffle, that's more bulk than just the phone. If I were a jogger, I could see maybe, but even then I would have my phone in a side pocket. I know there are people who maybe want both because sometimes they don't want their iPhone with them. But for somebody like me, my phone's with me all the time, except when I'm in the shower or asleep or something. Why would I also want a Nano? And when I run into battery issues, I use an external battery. It's a cradle. It makes the iPhone too fat, but at least I'm still only carrying one device instead of two.
Guy Soro, you don't have an iPhone. I know you've looked at moving up into this category of products. Are you still looking at an iPhone or an iPod Touch?
I don't think I'm going to buy an iPod Touch. It just seems like that would be kind of a stopgap measure. And I already have an 80-gig iPod Classic. So the real advantage to me is, as far as content goes, would be that it had a slightly better and bigger screen. But I'm saving up my pennies until Apple finally decides to give me my 32-gig iPhone. And then I'll probably go ahead and bite the bullet and get one at that point.
You know, I did the traveling thing last week. I had to go to Utah. And for me to go to Utah, that meant I had to drive for an hour to Lansing, Michigan. Then I had to take a flight from Lansing to Minneapolis. And then from Minneapolis to Las Vegas. Then I had to take a shuttle bus for 2 hours from... It was just crazy, right? And I knew that... excuse me, I'm losing my voice a little bit. I knew that my iPhone wasn't going to last the entire flight and the shuttle bus. I knew it wasn't going to go, 12 hours for me, listen to music constantly. And I really wanted to make sure that I had enough battery so I could use the phone when I needed. So I took my fifth generation iPod. It's a 80 gig or 60 gig. I don't even remember at this point.
Either a 30 or a 60.
Yeah, I think it's a 60 gig. And it had, yes, it is. And it has all my music on it, all my podcasts, everything is on there. And that's the first time I've used it in probably 6 or 7 months. And to be honest, I kind of missed it. I kind of liked using it. The form factor is really, really nice. It's much easier to use, in my opinion, than the iPhone as far as the iPod functionality. I do like that scroll wheel. It really is intuitive. I like using it more than I like using my finger on the iPhone screen. But that being said, unless I'm going on another plane trip or I'm going to be extended stay away from an electrical outlet, I'm just going to use the iPhone all the time.
And there's a thriving market now in these add-on batteries that just plug on the bottom of the iPhone just to give it that little bit of extra juice to get it through a long trip. And I think those sorts of devices will become increasingly popular rather than go to the effort of having a second iPod to cover that sort of thing.
So how many of you have been following Chrome? Have you been following Chrome, Guy Searle?
Yeah, just heard about it the other day. I know there were some rumors out there about it before, but I'd never really heard about it. It's Google's, for those that don't know, this is Google's new browser. A web browser that's supposed to integrate with Google services. Only one little problem. Doesn't work with OS X.
Yes.
As far as I know, it's... is it still Windows only,
yes,
or is it Windows and Linux?
No, it's just Windows only.
Yeah, I read that Sergey Brin, who I guess is one of Google's founders and a big Mac user, he admitted to a reporter that he finds it embarrassing that Chrome doesn't work with OS X. He's forced to use it using VMware.
I'm not too concerned about that. It'll come in time. I mean, the thing is, it's very, very early beta.
Yeah, let the Windows users beat on it for a while.
Well, exactly. And let's face it, like it or not, that is the big market for something like this, is the Windows users, because their browsing experiences really are pretty bad. I heard a stat today that apparently 75% of the internet is still using Internet Explorer, which I find incredibly depressing because it's such a terrible piece of software. So I'm not surprised that they want to get the Windows version up and running first. But, I mean, the thing is based on WebKit, which is the same web platform that Safari is based on. So right. I'm sure it's only a matter of time before Chrome is released for the Mac.
Hmm. What do you think? Have you been following that at all, Bill?
I have, but, you know, mostly through the eyes of my Windows-using friends and just to sort of amalgamate it. Basically, I'm reminded that Windows is a ghetto, and I know that sounds elitist, but Windows is just a crappy platform with no good software. They have no good browser choices. Even though they have Safari, which I've had Windows users tell me they really like it, but they want to use Firefox on Windows, not because they like it, not because they think it's nearly as polished as Safari, but because they want to have these plugins. They need a mail plugin for Gmail. The reason they need a mail plugin is because Windows does not have a usable consumer-level mail client. Outlook, Outlook Express, Outlook, whatever it is, they hate those. Everybody seems to hate those. So they use Firefox whether they want to or not because they need the plugins. It's like they're trying to build a jalopy car and they start giving up and giving up. They can't use Safari because it doesn't have a plugin. And so then Chrome comes out and they're like, well, here's another thing. They get four or five browsers. They cycle through them. It's living hell from the way they describe it.
Didn't Mozilla have a mail client that was kind of a complement to Firefox?
Yeah, Thunderbird.
Yeah.
It's not very good though. No. I mean, it's functional, but it's nothing. It's nowhere near as elegant as Mail is on the OS X platform.
Yeah, you can complain about the bugs in the Mail program if you want, but the bottom line is, in theory, that's the ideal Mail experience. Get it through a client. That's the way everyone should be doing it. And I've come to realize most Windows users don't have that. They don't even have a basic frickin' email program. That's how crappy their platform is. So it's like you're just throwing them one. Chrome is one more life raft. Here's one more browser. It's yet another compromise, but maybe this will get you somewhere.
We're going to take a short break. I'm going to play the previously recorded Brian Head Welch interview, and then we're going to come back and we're going to be joined by our buddy Lee.
Lee!
And I'm joined by Brian Head Welch. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going real well. Dude, I checked out your new album, Save Me From Myself. It's really, really rocking. I got to say, though, it's definitely not what I was expecting. I was expecting more of a sound like your old band, but I think this is more heavier than the old sound was. This really, really rocks. Was that your intention?
I love heavy music, and I've heard that a lot. By the way, a lot of people are like, I didn't know what to expect, but I didn't expect this because, you know, my spiritual awakening and everything, and people thought I was going to be more like spiritual sounding or something, but I'm like, I'm a heavy. I love heavy music, and that's what I came up with.
You know, I'm listening to it, and it's not really a young man's opus, a Rage Against the Machine type of album. It's more of a rage against the bad things in life. You think your fans are ready for that kind of a lyrical change?
We'll see. You know, I think there's a lot of people out there that are stuck in a rut and they're sick of the same old, you know, but we'll see. You know, it'll speak to some people, and I'm just talking about real life stuff that I went through, and people always like a good story of someone overcoming drug addiction because everybody's affected by that. In some way, you got a friend of a friend, or a family member that's an alcoholic or a drug addict. I mean, everybody does. So we'll see.
As a member of a huge, hugely popular band, Korn, at the time, going off on your own now, releasing your own album, there's really no one to answer to. There's no one to point a finger out at and say, you know, that song didn't really work because of so and so. This is just you. Let me back up and say it's not just you playing every instrument. You're not Prince, but this is your music. How do you feel about stepping in front of the microphone for yourself? The music is all you. Is it different than being a big band like you guys were?
Yeah, it's different. It's more I don't know. It's like more laid back because I know that it's just going to, you know, I just can let the things happen and in their own timing and stuff. But, and then on the other hand, I'm in charge of it all now. So it's like more work and more like hands on because in corn, I used to just get drunk and do my guitar tracks and like, woo, you know, hang out and party. But, now it's like, I do that now, but I do it without drinking. I just have fun, but there's a lot more. Just organization I got to be involved in and stuff, and it's a lot more fulfilling, I got to tell you, because you know when you're just goofing around all the time and letting everybody else do the hard work, it's you don't really feel the payoff at the end of the day when you work harder and you're like involved in everything. It just feels like you're more proud of it and you get more fulfillment out of it.
Do you think the new technologies that are out there, the new distribution models such as iTunes, is really going to help you sell this album as compared to, you know, if you'd have came out with a solo album 10 years ago, it probably wouldn't have done as good. I mean, more people have access to the music now. Do you think that helps you as an artist?
Yeah, I think so. It's just, music is crazy. I mean, as far as getting your music out there, I mean, there's, obviously everybody knows that the business is suffering, but music is at a all-time, like, high with consumers and stuff as far as like, you know, listening to it. So that's, I think that's what everybody should want as an artist, is to have their art heard by people, you know, and not, and the money and the fame and stuff shouldn't be number one. That's what I've learned, because I mean we're given a gift of music and stuff, and really our job is to make people connect and like make them feel something, you know.
Excuse me. Here's a question for you. You know, a lot of technology podcasts nowadays talk about the RIAA. I mean, it's really a merging of technology, social media, and what you're doing in the music industry. These things have all come together somehow. What do you think about the RIAA as an artist going after your fans, suing your fans for sharing your music? Obviously, they're stealing music, and that's not a good thing, but do you really think suing the RIAA, suing listeners of your music is the way to go, or do you think that's kind of disenfranchising some people?
Yeah, I think, I mean, to me, it's just like, it's a gift to them. So, you know, it'd be nice if they paid for it, because, you know, we got it costs money with all the studios and everything. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not going to go sue my fans, because, you know, that's just me. I mean, everybody's got a different opinion and I respect everybody's opinion, but it's like when you get a message out there that you're suing your fans, I mean, that'll spread around. People will be like, well, you know, I don't know. It just seems weird to me.
I agree. It's kind of strange to, but then again, it's not really you, but it is it's an organization that's purportedly speaking in your name as an artist. And
yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem like the artists have a lot of saying what's going on with their music once the CD is pressed and it's out there.
Yeah. But there's, as far as leaking, I don't like people, fans that leak the stuff before the street day. You know, I don't like that. So
no,
I'm different with that. But when it's out there, it's out there. It's a different age now.
So tell me, what are Head Homes?
I donated some money to a orphanage, and I built a head home in India for some neglected and rejected kids, you know, and I was just, it was just a little something I did back in 2005. I'm not connected to them really anymore, but it was an experience, that's for sure.
What made you get involved with that?
I quit corn and I was sitting at home bored, and I read in the Bible that Jesus helped poor people, so I ran into somebody, said, "I'm going to India in a month." I said, "I'm going with you."
And it was as simple as that. You just went.
I just went. I said, I want to go hang out with poor kids because I quit my career and I'm just chilling, so let's go.
So are you scared about this new album? I mean, you know, Korn sold over 30 million copies. That's a lot to live up to. Or are you not even worrying about what you did with Korn or your past, and it's kind of like a fresh start?
Yeah, it's just a fresh start. You know, I'm going at it my own way, and I'm not... If I wanted to stay and sell like a million or whatever, they sold like, you know, over a half million albums last album, I could have stayed in Korn and did that. So I want to share what I went through in the last few years just to, you know, in my songs and stuff, and whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I'm not looking for that. You know, I battle with it sometimes, though, because that's it's inside of all of us. You know, you want to be successful and stuff, but I'm trying to just keep my frame of mind down to that. Well, it's not about that right now because I left that. You know, yeah. if I wanted that, I could have stayed there. But it's just about, you know, getting a message out there.
Korn's, I think the coming out for Korn was probably 99 Woodstock. Do you ever see something like that going on with your single career? There's some big show that you're going to do maybe down the road that's everyone's going to say, holy crap, this is it. This is your big coming out. Do you see that happening, or are you going to kind of concentrate on more smaller gigs?
I'm just going to see what happens, you know. I believe it's just going to happen how it's supposed to, and everything happens in life. And I got to tell you, when I was the most happiest, when I look back in my career and stuff, the Woodstock show was amazing. I'm not putting that down or nothing. But as a person, when I was happiest is at the when we were coming up, you know, and we were like playing the small places like the theaters or the clubs with Deftones and touring with our friends and just having fun. That's before the big time hit. That's when I had just a blast, you know. So
why was it because you had that intimacy with the fans, or the fans really knew the music? It wasn't all about, hey, you've got this big album out there. What? Why was that the happiest, though?
It seemed like you could just, you know, go out there and have fun, and there wasn't as much pressure because it just seemed like you're at a club. You know, you're just having fun. Everyone's drinking, and when you're at an arena, you're up on the stage. It's like, you know, this is big. You better perform. You better not mess up. You better put on a good show for everybody. You know what I mean? It's big time, yeah. And there's a lot more pressure. And while the smaller ones are just like, let's go out and have a good time.
So it felt more like a business.
Anyway, and some people can go out in stadiums and say, I'm just going out and have a good time too. But I don't know. For me, it was like it was a little bit of pressure.
A lot of people say that there's a halo effect around the iPod. People buy the iPod, they really start digging it a lot, and that makes them buy a Macintosh. That was what happened with you, wasn't it?
I think I hit it at the same time. I got a 24-inch laptop with the iPod. It all came at once, and I was addicted to it, man. I was like, this is awesome. You don't got to carry around CDs And when you do, you just put them in your Mac and on the iPod, and then you can get rid of them or store them somewhere. You know, it's pretty cool.
What do you use your computer the most for?
And I got a problem with my computer. It's like I'll just stay on it like too long. I got a rule now that I won't go on my computer, which I break all the time at 12 and 6 at night, and I got to stay away from it. But I break it all the time, and it's like. It's just I use my computer for music ideas, obviously, you know, and I recorded all my vocals. This is funny. I recorded all my vocals on that album you heard through GarageBand.
GarageBand.
Yeah, and then I transfer. I had my engineer transfer it some high technical way out of the computer into Pro Tools, and then we mixed it through the board and all that. But I use it for music. I use it for. All my bill filing, you know, obviously email and all that stuff, and just my whole life's on it.
Do you have just the one machine, or do you have the backups too?
Yeah, I got backups. I got a G5. I got 17-inch. I got iMac for my daughter, and I'm a nut, man.
How old is your daughter now?
She's 10 years old, and she's
10 years old.
She's got the Mac down already, too.
Does she? Yeah, that's the same thing with my kids. They start doing stuff on the computer that I didn't show them, especially that photo booth program. I don't know. Kids seem to really, really dig that photo booth program that comes free with all the Macs. And, you know, they're taking pictures and putting effects to them. And it's amazing how quickly kids seem to adapt to new technologies. Does that surprise you when you watch your daughter use the computer, how quick she just takes to it?
Yeah, actually, because, and then I worry sometimes because she's like me, if I don't tell her to get off, she'll be on there for like 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, that's a bad thing too.
And that's not good at all. So I limit it to like 45 minutes, you know, I try to, but it trips me out because she's just like, she just picks it up, you know, she's got her email, and she's got her, her little site she goes to, and it trips me out. I want to get her into some photo booth and stuff like that too. That'd be fun.
Yeah, with the built-in camera on the new IMAX, it's real easy for them to do. One of my kids actually were taking one picture, and then they would use that picture as the backdrop and take another picture, so it looked like there was twins there. I couldn't figure out how they did it without Photoshop for the longest time. I'm like, how did you do that? And they thought it was funny that here's their dad, who's, you know, supposedly this big computer expert, and I can't figure out quickly how they did this simple little thing with this free program. It's kind of fun.
That's
one of our listeners, Jimmy Lee, he's a big fan of yours. He's a podcaster himself from Indie Radio Chattanooga. Chattanooga. It's one of those words, one of those cities that I can't pronounce well.
Yeah, yeah.
He actually sent in some questions he wanted me to ask you.
Okay.
The first one says, what is your current recording setup and how has technology changed the process for you over the years?
My current recording setup is just, it's all, I usually just throw my ideas down on you know, like demo stuff through GarageBand, and I use like a separate synth program and stuff. And I got just got some little mics at home, like a Shure, you know, just to get the rough idea of vocals down. I go into GarageBand and get the song idea, and then I take it to the big stuff where you know, the big consoles, and get the musicians in there and load up the guitars and stuff, and just go for it. And I usually, like the whole album you heard, I wrote it on one of those M-Audio keyboards,
those
little tiny ones.
Yeah.
I wrote all the stuff on that thing. It just, and then I brought in the guitars later on, so the M-Audio just got the rough idea.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. It was just totally different than what I've done in Korn, you know?
It'd be amazing to find that these companies have no idea what, you know, once they sell a product, they don't know what it's used for. I think it'd be really interesting for those companies to find out, especially a company like M-Audio and Apple that you're using GarageBand, that here's this big album that's coming out. It was a whole bunch of it was done on a Macintosh using these really cheap programs. I mean, this is not a real expensive stuff. Almost anybody could afford this.
Totally. I mean, that's what... Because I'm not the brightest guy in the world, you know. I'm not all technical. Even I try to get like Logic and all that, and Logic Pro, and I just was like, I can't figure this stuff out. I don't got the patience to read the stupid manuals, so I just needed some like ABC stuff. So I went to GarageBand, M-Audio, and just another like, you know, a few like cheap programs I used just to get what I was hearing in my head and my heart and stuff out of me onto the demo idea, and then I'd go into the studio. But yeah, the GarageBand, those vocal, all of them. I didn't record any studio vocals in the studio. I did it all by myself with GarageBand. It was awesome.
Do you set up a room that's kind of soundproofed, or you just kind of the ambient noise is there and you just roll with it?
Well, I took it to my recording studio. I took my G5 from my house, had my guys set up a vocal booth type of deal with my computer in there, and just did it like that. Because I was, you know, I'm singing vocals now, and I never did lead vocals, so I was like just wanting to really focus by myself and not have like somebody in there telling me what to do or watching my mistakes.
Was that kind of freaky to listen to it back and knowing that it's just you now singing?
Yeah, at first it was like. See, I had to put a bunch of effects on my voice because I was like, I didn't like my voice, you know, so I put like these crazy effects. I still got a lot on there, you can hear on the album, but it was a lot crazier too. But I got into it once I put the effects on, and then it took me like a couple years to let these guys take the effects off and put like the real stuff and for me to like my voice. So yeah, it's like I'm my own worst critic.
Do you think these technologies that you're using and that everyone has, you know, freely available to them for the most part, you think this is going to put sound engineers in trouble as far as their jobs? Because if anybody can make CD quality music using a personal computer, you know, do you think that these guys have anything to worry about?
Maybe in the future, you know, because look at these, like we're just talking about our kids, like they're whizzes on computers. Think about them, you know, 25 years old or whatever. Knowing what they know in the, or learning all the stuff they're going to learn. I mean, everybody might be like a professional engineer by that time. I mean, Apple might be having like you know, the pro audio programs coming with the computer when you buy them, you know, could be totally changed. So we'll see. I mean, who knows what's going on? I mean, everything's tripping me out how fast it's growing.
Another question from Jimmy is, the more high-tech things become, do you find yourself going back to just guitar and amp or just the opposite?
Well, you can hear on my album, you know, it's all so much guitar. So I love using the computer, just like I said, to get the demo idea. And then I love to go and get the fat guitar sound and just play, you know.
And what's your favorite guitar?
I got a new baritone that Ibanez made me. It's tuned real low, like the Korn stuff, and it's really beefy and stuff. And we played some Les Pauls and G&L. I like all types of guitars. I'm a guitar guy.
When you think musically, do you think vocally or do you think guitar?
When you hear a song
in your head, are you hearing the guitar or are you hearing the vocals when you're coming up with an idea?
I hear the guitars and I hear the vocal melodies. I don't hear no words or anything, but I kind of hear it all together. And I never did that before, but I just, you know, when I got clean and stuff, I just prayed and I said, you know, help me get some songs going here, man. and I just was like, it just started coming. You know, I heard the vocal ideas and the whole thing. It was a trip. Like sometimes I'd be going to sleep and a song would come to me while I'm trying to go to sleep. So I'd have to get up and throw the idea down and it would birth the song. It was pretty cool.
Two more questions and we'll wrap it up here and let you get on with your life. First, what were the big musical influences on you growing up?
A lot of the metal, because I love heavy music and just loud music, so I liked the darker metal, like, you know, Ozzy and you know, Randy Rhoads was a favorite of mine, and I liked Motley Crue when they were coming out with the Shout at the Devil stuff. And
yeah, it's kind of funny with Motley Crue. They come out with Shout at the Devil and this really heavy, and then all of a sudden it's girls, girls, girls.
Oh, I know. They went through that bandana, polka dot bandana stuff, and then they turned back to all leather, and it was. But I like the early stuff, the darker stuff.
Yeah, me too. I blame MTV for all that, by the way.
Yeah, I mean the trends and stuff, you know.
Yeah. But there was some bands out there at the time that kind of walked the fine line between the style and the heavy, like Wasp, for instance. I mean, they kind of had that glam thing going, but yet their music was really, really heavy.
Yeah, you're right. I like Wasp, too, the LOVE. That's kind of where I got the idea for that song, that first song on my album, LOVE. I was thinking back to that Wasp song, LOVE.
I could kind of hear that, too.
Yeah, see?
There was an influence there that I wasn't hearing, but now that you mention it, I'm like, ah.
Yeah.
The last question that Jimmy had, and it's kind of an odd one because, you know, we're talking about iPods and computers and stuff, but he says, what's your CD player?
What does that mean?
I don't know. He just said, oh, I'm sorry, what's in your CD player?
Oh,
I missed
what's
a word.
In my
what's
CD
in the
player.
CD player, yep.
I like that new Under Oath album that's out, man. It's heavy.
Yeah, that's heavy.
It came out yesterday, and it's just, man, it's really heavy. I like it.
If you were going to say Celine Dion, I was going to hang up on you, by the way.
Oh, well, good thing I didn't tell you number two. No.
So do you like the way music is going nowadays? Personally, I think that it's really innovative. You're hearing stuff that you never would have before, and I think the internet has a lot to do with that. Do you agree? Do you think the music's kind of going in places that no one would have foreseen?
Yeah, I think there's no rules, you know. And people would say that before, but there's, like, really no rules now. And some of these kids can, like, get their stuff heard. We got the YouTube going on and all that stuff. And I don't know, but I kind of missed, you know, these big albums that come out by these bands that you just love. And Metallica, there's excitement going on right now for that Metallica album, and
I heard the first single.
What's that?
The first single of Metallica's new album coming out, I've heard, and it sounds pretty good.
Yeah, sounds good. The only thing I'm trying to understand is that snare drum for Lars. I just, something about it's like, but I hate that part of me when I get technical, but it sounds awesome. It sounds like the old stuff, you know what I mean?
Yes, it sounds like the Black Album before, Justice for All and Master of Puppets, and that's what it kind of reminded me of. It's less than the, what was the Load? I didn't enjoy that too much.
Yeah.
It definitely does sound like the old stuff to me as well.
Yeah, well, the Diehard fans are going to love it.
Yeah, and that's what I am. I kind of got out of Metallica for a long time because it kind of went soft, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm constantly looking out for new stuff, and I'm really happy when someone like you comes out and I mean, the vibe of your new album, which, by the way, comes out September 9th, and it's called Save Me From Myself, for all the listeners. It's got a vibe to it that I really dig. It kind of, honestly, what is the one song with the little girl singing in it? That little chant they do.
Oh, yeah, Rebel. That's one of my favorite songs on the album.
I think that is my favorite song on the album. But you know what the vibe that I get from that is? The Freddy Krueger movies. You remember from the mid-'80s?
Totally. What I tell everybody when they ask me about that song. I'm like, I love that little... that innocent kid stuff with the eerie melodies. It reminds me of those scary movies, but I just love mixing those two together because they're so opposite, you know?
It worked really, really well on that song, and my mind went back to those older 80 horror films that I think are the best, and I was like, wow, I could totally see this in a Freddy Krueger movie. It was, what are those, Friday the 13th? Or no, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this would so work.
Sesame Street vocal line. That's na na na. You know, it's like na 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 na. It's just totally awesome.
But I don't know. You did something to it that it's just, I don't know, something about little kids singing creepy melodies. Well, Brian, thanks a lot for being on the My Mac Magazine podcast. Wish you all the success and good luck with Save Me From Myself. It rocks, and I think a lot of our listeners are really going to dig it.
Right on, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
And thanks again to Brian Welch for the interview. We got a couple things we need to take care of business-wise on the podcast before we get back into the main show. But first, let me welcome to the show Lee Gibbons. Hello, Lee Gibbons.
Hey, Tim. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. How have you been?
Not bad. Just adjusting to, you know, kids back in school and getting ready for the fall.
Have you bought any new Macintosh gear? Because I know how much if you even go within 20 miles of an Apple store, you end up buying something. So what's the lightest thing you bought? Come on.
Well, I did go by the Apple store just to talk to the guy, and I was very close to buying the kids a new iMac, but I think I'm going to hold off.
Yeah?
I got to see what we're going to come out with in January.
Yeah, you think that we're going to have some new Macs in January?
Yeah, I think the iMacs definitely have I think they're going to be refreshed soon. I think Apple's going to probably add some new things. And, you know, also interested to see what they're going to do for next week's announcement.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier. We all kind of agree that we're going to see a new Nano. Probably 8.0 of the iTunes software, although we didn't speculate on what that's going to entail. I'm not huge into crystal ball reading, but... you know, it's going to be a music event. It's going to be centered around the iPod, so we're definitely going to get something new. So, you know, we're going to find out a few short days from now anyway, so there's no real sense in getting into it too much.
Exactly.
Last week we had a contest for PosiMotion, and first of all, I want to apologize for our winners from 3 weeks ago. They still haven't got their iTunes cards. There was a mix-up that is being taken care of, but I do want to assure the two people who won this week, they will be getting their $10 iTunes gift certificates ASAP, I promise. But the winners this week are Nicholas Sayers and Dunham Swift. So congratulations to both of them, and thank you very much, PosiMotion, for sponsoring the contest. Sam Levin usually does this portion of the show, but Sam's at a conference this week, so he couldn't be with us. But thank you very much, PosiMotion, and congratulations to Nicholas and Dunham. Dunham, when I see Dunham, I think of the sports store. Do you guys have Dunham Sports anywhere where you're at?
No,
they're pretty big here in Michigan. The other thing we need to take care of real quick here is our sponsor, Otherworld Computing.
Hey.
And they've got a lot of good sales going on right now. One of the sales is for Drive Genius 2. If you're looking for software to optimize, repair your hard drive, fully compatible with G4, G5, and all Intel Mac systems. Check it out. Go up to MacSales.com, do a search for Drive Genius 2, or simply follow the link from MyMac.com, podcast number 199, and pick up a copy of Drive Genius 2 from ProSoft Engineering. ProSoft Engineering was our sponsor at the last Macworld Expo. Guy Searle, you got to see a lot of ProSoft Engineering.
Yeah, sure did.
Yeah, the lady who's in a lot of the video shots and a lot of the pictures, the blonde lady, do you remember her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you sent me a picture with her in it.
Yes, I did. She actually had a baby just recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Absolutely. Congratulations go out to her. I'm sure she listens to the show every week.
Oh, doesn't everybody?
Especially, you know, as a newborn mom, this show probably helps put her baby to sleep.
That's an endorsement if I've ever heard one.
That's an endorsement. So thank you very much, MacSales.com. So what do we got now? What's going on, Guy? What's the big news story that we haven't hit yet?
Apple and AT&T sued because of iPhone popularity. A new class action suit has been opened by iPhone user William Gillis, who's a former executive with Chicken of the Sea. He purchased their flagship 16 gigabyte 3G iPhone in California and is upset because Apple sold so many of them, he can't get all the 3G love that he wants.
Does this mean I can sue Chicken of the Sea because there's no chicken in there?
Probably, actually, yeah.
Isn't it the exact – I hate to jump the gun. I just couldn't hold that one. Isn't it like the exact same thing, false advertising? I'm going to sue this guy. I'm going to
– The only
actually,
other
he doesn't work for them anymore, so I don't know what good that would do.
The only other time in tech history that I can remember something like this was an issue – and we're going to pick on Lee right now, being the AOL guy he is, was back in the late 90s when everybody was an America Online subscriber, and it wasn't called America Online, it was called AOL. Because, you know, everybody had dial-up, and the numbers were always, always busy. You just could not get in from, say, 3 p.m. to, 9 o'clock p.m.,
yeah,
they
decided to go from a lot of people, you know, a lot of people I talk to who don't remember the 1980s CompuServe paying by the minute.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Getting on and try to get off really fast. AOL in the old days, you paid by the hour, and a lot of people were, to increase their subscriber base, they went to unlimited.
Yep, and that's exactly what killed them, because when I first joined America Online, I had a 5 hour a month. Or a week. Was it a week? Or
it was a month.
I think it was a... Was it a month?
Yeah, I had a five-hour package, yeah.
And it was, you know, $30 a month. And it was for 5 hours, and then they went to this unlimited plan, and I couldn't get on ever. It was crazy.
Yeah, the thing is with this...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you both are just too polite.
Somebody be rude here, please.
Okay. Danny Cohen.
Yeah, the thing is with this, I mean... you know, this is so bogus. I almost can't stand to read it here on the page. from my point of view, and you know, I work as an IT and telecoms consultant, so I deal with mobile phone contracts for my clients on a regular basis. When you sign a contract for a cellular service, you are getting you're paying for a service, and that service is provided to you on a best endeavors basis, and that basically means that. The service provider will do their level best to provide you with service, but there are no guarantees. And, you know, this is what this guy, if he genuinely feels like this, and he's not just some shill for this lawyer, if this is what his genuine complaint is, he's got to understand that you can't just go filing a lawsuit just because lots of people use the same phone and AT&T's 3G service isn't very good.
Well, they can, and they have.
If this goes anywhere further than the judge throwing it across his desk in disgust, then it will be a travesty of justice, in my opinion, because this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, what a travesty of justice here in the U.S.
Yeah, definitely. I used to work for Roadrunner, and if you start looking at the contracts, you know, just like David said, When you start putting service level agreements together and trying to get something above, on this side of the pond, we just call it best effort, but it becomes really expensive to maintain a certain level of uptime and or predictability when it comes to bandwidth. I think people are just, I think the iPhone is, you know, when people looked at it, people consume 10 times more bandwidth on an iPhone than they do a regular standard cell phone. So I think they're just not used to having this congestion when, you know, Apple's doing so well selling these iPhone 3Gs.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't know. You know, I've been having a lot of problems with my iPhone the last 3 weeks now. I've had to completely erase it and reinstall all the software a number of times now because it just stops responding. And to be quite honest, I'm thinking about going up to Apple with it, but here's my worry. I am about, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks past the 1 year mark for this iPhone.
Oh, wow.
So do you think if I go up there with this, they're just going to hand me a new 3G, or you think they're going to say, well, we can fix it, but it's going to cost you money because you're over a year?
I don't think you'll get new hardware. They'll probably just do what you've already done, which is flash it and reinstall it. I mean,
yeah, but that's the point. I've done it a number of times.
Yeah, the point is problems with the software on the phone. That's a legitimate complaint, and Apple has to do something about that. And I think we're all aware that the 2.0 software release has been a little bit janky in places. But that's not what these guys are complaining about. These guys are saying that the thing is misrepresented because they can't get the speed that they've had advertised to them. And it's just like, you know, it's a case of your mileage may vary and just suck it up.
The last topic I want to hit upon today before we wrap up the show, and I know we're not going to have you on too longly, but I had a half-hour interview that I already did with the ex-guitarist of Korn, Brian Welch, that was earlier in the show. So
sweet.
It was a good interview. I enjoyed myself. This is kind of, you know, I don't know where to come down on this, so I want to ask each one of you individually, and we're going to start with Bill Palmer. And I'm kind of springing this on you guys, and I don't know how much you know about this, but Apple rejects a fart joke iPhone app. Did you all read this?
Yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah? Did you read about this, Bill?
No, I missed that one, but I'm glad we get to talk about fart jokes on your show today.
Yeah, every now and then. So basically the idea was, and I looked at the video that the developer actually released on the net to show what this looked like. It was just various pictures of people's finger, and you literally swipe your finger across their finger, and well, you know what happens. And for the different characters that you see on the screen, you hear a different, shall we say, sound. And quite honestly, yeah, it's a useless application, but on the other hand, it was very well done. I mean, there was no question in my mind that this was a quality app as far as functionality. It even vibrated. I mean, you know, it's say what you want about the application itself, it was well done. Apple says, we've reviewed your application, Pull My Finger, which is personally one of the best application names of all time. We have determined that this application is of limited utility to the broad iPhone and iPod Touch user community and will not be published on the App Store. What do you think about that, Bill?
I think Apple can probably do what they want. It's their game. It's like if you're inviting me to be on your show and you said, well, Bill, we want John, but you can't use this word and that word. If I use those words, you're going to kick me off or delete it or edit it out. That's fine. What Apple's doing, though, seems to be very much ad hoc. I mean, we don't know what they're telling developers, but at least from the standpoint of us end users, it looks like they're just willy-nilly. They kicked this off because somebody didn't like fart jokes. Somebody else at Apple kicked off the I Am Rich app because, I don't know, somebody – who's making these decisions? Where is the policy? If there is a policy, we need to see this publicly because it would be like you telling me I can say anything I want on this show and then beating me up and kicking me off because I said something you told me I could say or you didn't give me any rules. If Apple wants this control over the environment, that's fine. I think they owe it to us more than the developers. Let us know, because I don't care. I think I wouldn't use that app. I wouldn't use the I Am Rich app. But as an end user, I want to know what else you're keeping from me. Let me know. Put out your policy publicly. Whatever it is, I choose to be an iPhone user. I got to live with it. But I want to know what you're taking away from me. It's the same reason I want to know what the government's trying to hide from me. If you got to do that, you got to do what you got to do. But let me know so I can make my decisions accordingly.
Guy Searle, if you were an iPhone user, you would have been one of the first 100 people to download this app, I know for a fact.
Quite possibly, but I still think it needs more cowbell.
Yes, more cowbell. What do you think, though? What do you think of this policy of Apple rejecting this, saying it has limited utility to the broad iPhone and iPod Touch user community?
Well, I think Bill pretty much hit on it, since Apple has never really, you know, the definition of what they'll accept for their venting process for iPhone apps is so broad that it's impossible for anyone to know what they can or cannot submit with a likelihood of acceptance. So I don't really think that's very fair. Apple should distribute some kind of policy letter saying what it is that they'll take for the iPhone. And for everybody else, hell, just, jailbreak it.
Mm-hmm. Because, when you spend this much money on a consumer device, you definitely want to void your warranty. Lee Gibbons, what's your take on this?
Yeah, it's funny because we brought this up today. I was talking to a couple of my developers. I was like, what do you think of Apple doing this? And we had a little discussion about it. Some people said, a couple of developers thought it's good that we keep the crap out of the store. They're thinking, let's raise the bar. But I'm like, well, there's like 8 flashlights. And, cowbell, if you really think about it, that has, I love it. I mean, I play Blue Oyster Cult all the time and then, turn my cowbell on. But some people may think that's just really dumb and have little utility. So I think Apple probably needs to be a little more broad and allow more people. I mean, when you start becoming the arbiter of taste, I understand the I Am Rich app. People could accidentally purchase it and incur this $1,000 charge and then have to go through all the problems of getting it backed out. I understand the problems with that, customer service wise, but pull my finger. I don't know. I think they have space. There's an audience for that kind of application.
Dave, some of them are right here.
Absolutely, yeah. This is interesting. I get the impression that certainly through reading through the email that Apple sent out, that this is a policy that's probably currently being reviewed. I don't imagine the way they review these apps is that they all sit round as a group and discuss the pros and cons of each one and decide whether they're going to put them forward. I think there's a team of guys who've got a set of guidelines that probably have been revamped fairly rapidly over the last few weeks since the 3G iPhone and the App Store went live. And they're just individually, with each application, trying to interpret them and apply them to the applications and decide whether they're going to let them through or not. And it's throwing up some oddities. I think if this app had gone in front of a different evaluator on a different day, then maybe it would have gone into the App Store. With an app like this, with the fact that the taste of what it does is perhaps questionable in some people's eyes, I don't think Apple's going to take too much heat over it, to be honest. But I think the wider point, and this is alluded to in the original story, is some developers are now starting to say, well, I was thinking about doing an app, but I'm not sure.
You're stepping on my response, David. Darn it. Go ahead. Probably make it better than I would have.
Well, yeah, some developers are now saying, well, I was thinking about putting an app together, but now I'm not so sure whether Apple will let it through, so I'm not going to bother. If it's starting to stifle innovation, then that is not a good thing. And I'd agree with what everyone else has said. We probably need a little bit more clarity on what exactly is acceptable and what isn't, so that people can understand. Because I'd hate to be in a situation where you put, 3-4 weeks of your life into developing something you think is going to be a really great application, and then Apple turn around and say, oh, no, sorry, you can't have it on the store.
Well, we're probably going to have to get rid of you eventually, David, because you just keep stealing all my thunder. You made exactly the point that I was going to make, in that this sets a chilling precedence to me, and I'm worried how many developers are going to see this and not develop this really extraordinary great software because their fear of putting 500 hours into this application and have it rejected by Apple. If they can't sell it and they've already put this kind of time into it, well, then they're kind of screwed, As an iPhone developer myself, I'm not, the tech developer, but I am commissioning someone to make an app that I completely came up with this idea. I think Guy Searle and David Cohen, you both know what it is.
Yeah.
Did I share that with you, Guy?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I will eventually. Go ahead, David.
I was going to say, I think with your application, you're probably fairly safe. But again, the point of an application is, depending on what it can do, And we've already seen this with the NetShare application that allowed you to use the iPhone as a tethered modem. Depending on what it can do, it may cause problems for Apple further down the line. You can take applications that might have a perfectly innocent purpose and, you know, they can be used for bad things. And if that gets in the press and causes negative press, then Apple might turn around and pull it. So it's always a risk, and you kind of, I think you have to go into developing for the iPhone, the App Store, with a clear understanding that that's the risk you're taking, and you know, make sure your code is portable in case it doesn't get through or it gets pulled later.
Yeah, that's my concern. You know, we're paying a developer to create this app for us. Creating something like this is not a simple matter. I mean, the application itself is pretty simple, and it has limited usability, but I can see it used for a lot of different ways. However, that being said, I spend all this money on a developer to create this for us. I submit it to Apple, and they just turn around and reject it. Well, I don't know if that's really fair to you. Lee, you work for a company, and you guys develop App Store iPhone applications. If Apple just says, nah, we don't want that up there, you guys are going to eat that cost. Do you think that's fair? Hello?
Lee?
Lee? I think we lost Lee. Bill Palmer.
Oh, sorry, guys. I'm back.
That's okay.
My plug popped out there for a second. I don't know. You know, we do spend a lot of time and energy. I mean, I wish I could videotape some of the sessions we have at work just talking about the apps and how passionate people are about it. We spend, you know, there's lots of blood, sweat, and tears going into these applications. It's not an easy endeavor. It's pretty difficult. And then, getting it to the final point, getting it out to the customers is something that you really want to get done. And sometimes, you know, people are just testing out things, and they may make this really quick, easy app, but they may become one of the best application developers you'll have in the future. So you really don't want to kind of cut off that kind of creativity. You want to keep people excited. And losing the excitement, I think, is probably one of the biggest things that I would fear if I were running the App Store.
Yeah, you start stepping on too many developers being the arbiters of taste,
yeah.
And these developers are just going to say, well, you know what, I can't release it here, then maybe I'll release it as shareware for the Windows Mobile. I mean, you know, obviously the functionality isn't the same, but maybe the application will work on those platforms just as well. Or the big thing coming out soon, Android from Google.
Right.
You know, they just had this big competition. Those developers out there got, you know, $250,000 for a great idea and a great application.
But I think David's right, too. There's probably, you know, it's like going to the DMV on a certain day. You get the right person. You may get through really fast, and then you may end up getting the wrong person, and you'll be there all day. So,
you think it would be fair for Apple to put in some kind of an appeals process in app submission?
I think they have to. I mean, this is a death sentence. Nothing else in iTunes is a death sentence. People say Apple doesn't. Well, they do. I mean, you have to assume the porn industry would love to have their movies available on iTunes for download. Mm-hmm. You don't see that. We assume Apple's rejected it on matters of taste. Even though you can get like Basic Instinct that has lots of sex, you can't get like Debbie Does Dallas. I know, I've tried, right? But that's not a death sentence because you, right? I mean, first
there's
of all,
other revenue, there's other distribution models. Methods. For
other
those.
Than jailbreaking, which is something that I really don't think more than the geekiest 1% of users even do. Even
I'm not doing it.
Yeah, even something like with music, Apple has 85% market share. You can still go down to Walmart. So, I mean, this is the only aspect, and Apple doesn't seem to reject podcasts at all for whatever reason. But this is the only way where Apple can give somebody a death sentence. And in that sense, I think they do have more of a moral responsibility to not kill somebody's career off. Because, you know, let's say they didn't like Head's album, Brian Welch's album. If somebody at Apple didn't like it, they kick it out. He's still going to sell on Amazon.com and Walmart. It's the only place where you can ruin somebody's career, and I think you really got to be careful with that.
Yeah, great point. That's all I got for this week. Anybody else want to bring something up before we wrap the show?
I'm changing my name to Bill Ocho Cinco officially. You can get my jersey at NFL.com.
Just make sure you send me the correct spelling of it so we can put it in the show notes. Because, you know, you leave it up to me, and hey, who knows what it's going to be spelt like.
I'm looking forward to that.
David Cohen, any parting thoughts?
Nothing from me, I think. Just waiting for next Tuesday, and might be down the Apple Store on Wednesday morning.
Guy Searle?
Yeah, what's anything? We doing anything special next week?
We'll talk about that as soon as we get done recording.
Okay.
Lee?
Well, I'm thinking of the same boat. We're anxiously awaiting what's coming out next week, and we're just busy trying to get this next versions of our software out the door.
Cool. As Geiser was alluding to, next week will be our 200th episode. We might do a little bit of something special. It's not going to be like our 100th episode. It's kind of a bad time for me to really plan something big, and I've been extremely busy in negative ways lately. So personally, I'm not going to do anything huge for the next show, but I think we're going to kind of do a retrospective. We're going to kind of look back on some of the shows, some of the guests, that sort of thing. I know David Cohen's also working on something that may or may not happen for the next show. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
We might just flex the format just a little bit.
Just a little bit. So that's it for this week. We will be back next week with all the Apple happenings. What happens next Tuesday? What's the new iPod? What's the new iTunes looking like? So stay tuned. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.